text number 132 through 138. Rai kahe aminata tumi sutradhara.
Rahe kahe aminata tumi sutradhara.
Rahe kahe aminata tumi sutradhara.
Je mata nacha tai che chahi nachi bara.
Je mata nacha tai chahi nachi bara.
Je mata nacha tai che chahi nachi bara.
Rai kahe aminata tumi sutradhara.
Je mata nacha tai che chahi nachi bara.
Rai kahe aminata tumi sutradhara.
Je mata nacha tai che chahi nachi bara.
Rai kahe.
Ramananda Rai replied,
Ami,
I,
Nata,
dancer,
Tumi,
you,
Sutradhara,
the puller of the strings,
Jai,
whatever,
Mata,
way,
Nachao,
you make me dance.
Taiche,
in that way.
Chahi,
I want.
Nachibara,
to dance.
Translation: Sri Ramananda Roy said, I am just a dancing puppet, and you pull the strings. Whichever way you make me dance, I will dance.
Responsively, Sri Ramananda Roy said,
I am just a dancing puppet.
And you pull the strings.
Whichever way you make me dance,
I will dance.
So Lord Krishna says, Namitar Matra Bhava Savya Sachin, just become my instrument, Arjuna. And here Ramananda Roy is replying, I am just your instrument. I'm just your puppet. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. By engaging our senses in the service of Krishna's senses, our senses become his senses. And that is bhakti yoga. So Ramananda Roy is speaking, but because he is a fully surrendered devotee of the Lord, he is saying that actually you're using me to speak through me. That is your mercy. A nice verse that illustrates that is in the story of the original Bhagavatam commentary by Sridhar Swami, where Lord Shiva says, aham veti, sukha veti, vyasa veti, naveti va. In other words, Vyasadeva spoke the Srimad, or compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he may or may not have understood it. He compiled it, but he might not have understood it. In other words, his senses were surrendered to Krishna completely, and of course we understand that he understood it, but there's a possibility he could not have, because he was just surrendered, his senses were just surrendered to Lord Krishna.
Mora jiva vinayanra tumi vinadhari, tomara mane je utte thahe uchari.
My dear Lord, my tongue is just like a stringed instrument, and you are its player. Therefore, I simply vibrate whatever arises in your mind. Well, we know Lord Chaitanya's instruction was gramya katibe, gramya kata na shunibe. Don't engage in idle talk, village talk. And unfortunately, we're not as advanced in controlling our tongues as we would like to be. Therefore, we do often engage in prajalpa, atyahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha. The tongue is meant for constantly chanting the glories of Lord Krishna, but we get involved in village talk. What is this? What is the price of that? Kya bhave, kya labhe, Prabhupada, in a lecture once said. But the perfection is that the tongue is always engaged in vibrating the holy name. Paramaiswara Krishna Swayam Bhagavan Sarva Avatari Sarva Karana Pradhan. Ramananda Roy then began to speak on Krishna Tattva. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said. He is personally the original Godhead, the source of all incarnations and the cause of all causes. So this is confirmed in the first canto, third chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, where there's a list of different kalas or incarnations of God. And there at the end of that list it is said, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna is the original Swayam Bhagavan. He is Avatari. He is not Avatar, but he is the source, Sarva Avatari, the source of all incarnations. He's the original Godhead. All other forms of the Lord are engaged in some kind of activity related to creation or maintenance or destruction of the material world. But Swayam Krishna, Sri Krishna, he has nothing to do. He simply engages in Rasalila, Ananda Maya Vyasat. His only business is enjoyment. He doesn't have to go to the office. He's always engaged with his Lakshmis or Gopis. So that's one very strong indication that out of all forms, Krishna is the Swayamrup, the original form, because of his activities. Ananta Vaikuntha Ara, Ananta Avatara, Ananta Brahmandaiha Sabara Adhara. There are innumerable Vaikuntha planets as well as innumerable incarnations. In the material world also there are innumerable universes, and Krishna is the supreme resting place for all of them. Here Krishna is called Sabara Adhara, or the resting place of all living beings. And that's another meaning for the word Narayana. Narayana. It's not Narayan, by the way. Some people say Narayan, like a man yawning or something, but it's Narayana. So Narayan means the resting place of all living beings. We're looking for that place where we will be perfectly satisfied. Prabhupada gives the example of a child in a room full of women, a young baby. The mother has just got her new baby and she's showing her baby off to her friends, so all the other ladies are holding the baby and pulling the cheeks and everything that one does with little babies. And the baby's crying, and everybody's trying to stop the baby crying, and they pass the baby around. But only when the baby gets back to his mother does he stop crying, because somehow their little babies know when they're back with their mother. Until we get back to the lotus feet of Narayana, we won't stop moving. We won't be satisfied. And there are innumerable universes, and we're wandering, Brahmanda Brahmite, we're wandering throughout all of them, but ultimately we're looking for Krishna.
Satchidananda Tanu Brajendra Nandan Sarveshwara Sarvasakti Sarvarasa Purna.
The transcendental body of Sri Krishna is eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. He is the son of Nanda Maharaj. He is full of all opulences and potencies, as well as all spiritual mellows.
Ishwaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam.
Krishna is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Very important to keep this in mind. Who is Krishna? What is his position in our lives? What does he have to do with our lives practically? Not just that he's the deity in the temple, or he's the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, or he's the name that we put on the front of our temple, Hare Krishna temple. But what does Krishna actually mean in our lives? And Ishwara Parama Krishna, he's the supreme controller. So nothing happens without his sanction. He has got such potency that everything that happens to us, we should know some way or other it is connected with Krishna. So there's no injustice. It's not that we've been forgotten or we've been left alone in the material world and that things are unconnected to Krishna or unconnected to our purva karma. In every way, karmana daivanat trena, whatever is happening to us, it is under the influence of superior authorities, and the top authority is Lord Krishna. So there's a meaning to everything. It is very, very important to remember this, because if you see things as disconnected, then there's a tendency to get bewildered, morose, melancholy. But if you just understand that Krishna is guiding our lives in every way, at every step, and he's helping us to advance in spiritual life so that we can get out of the material world once and for all. We cannot be happy here. We cannot go back to Godhead until we're fully surrendered to Krishna. We could do it immediately if we had that much commitment. Unfortunately, it is we ourselves who are holding back. We're catching hold of the material world and then screaming, "Help, let me go." Just like Ashtavakra, when he told Janak Maharaj, Janak asked him, "Why is it that although I want to get out of the material world, Maya seems to catch me?" In other words, there's some force out there named Maya who has got a grudge against me and is holding me back, and it's just not fair, and I protest. But it's not like that. It is we who are attached to being independent of Krishna, to being the Parama Purusha, the supreme enjoyer, and all we have to do is let go, but we can't do that so quickly because of our conditioning. Therefore, every little thing that happens to us in our lives is part of Krishna's plan to get us free from this disease that we have. We have a skin disease, and Krishna is making the right adjustments so that we can finally cut the knot, hridaya granthis, the knot of affection for this material body and for material enjoyment. Chidyante sarva sangshaya have to cut that knot. So, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sarva Karana Karanam, he's the cause of all causes. He's behind everything. And he's Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu. He's equal to everyone. And he's Bhakta Vatsala. He's the friend of his devotees. This kind of vision, this kind of faith will help you so much in your spiritual lives to become transcendental even while in the material world. A positive vision of Krishna being Suridham, your friend. He's in control. Nothing is out of his grasp. And everything's on course. And it may look disastrous, but you can remain completely aloof no matter what happens if you just stick to the lotus feet of Krishna. Vrindavane aprakrita navina madana kama gayatri kama vijayajana upasana. In the spiritual realm of Vrindavan, Krishna is the spiritual, ever-fresh Cupid. In the spiritual realm of Vrindavan, Krishna is the spiritual, ever-fresh Cupid, the transcendental Cupid. He is worshipped by the chanting of the Kama Gayatri Mantra with the spiritual seed clinging. Purport. This Vrindavan is described in the Brahma Samhita 556 in this way. Sriya kanta kanta parama purushakalpatarava druma bhumis chintamani ganamai toyam amritam kataganam natyam gamanam api vangsi priyasaki chidanandam jyoti paramapi tadasvadyam api cha Sayatra Shiradbi Sravati Surabhibhyas Chasumahan Nimesardakyo Vavajati Nahi Yatrapi Samayaha Vajeshveta Dvipam Tamaham Iha Golokam Itiyam Vidantaste Shantashiti Virala Chara Katipaye. The spiritual realm of Vrindavan is always spiritual. The goddess of fortune and the gopis are always present there. They are beloved by Krishna, and all of them are equally spiritual like Krishna. In Vrindavan, Krishna is the Supreme Person and is the husband of all the gopis and the goddess of fortune. The trees in Vrindavan are wish-fulfilling trees. The land is made of touchstone and the water is nectar. Words are musical vibrations and all movements are dancing. The flute is the Lord's constant companion. The planet Goloka Vrindavan is self-luminous like the sun and is full of spiritual bliss. The perfection of life lies in tasting that spiritual existence. Therefore, everyone should cultivate its knowledge. In Vrindavan, spiritual cows are always supplying spiritual milk. Not a single moment is wasted there. In other words, there's no past, present, or future. Not a single particle of time is wasted. Within this material universe, the devotees worship that transcendental abode as Goloka Vrindavan. Lord Brahma himself said, "Let me worship that spiritual land where Krishna is present." This transcendental Vrindavan is not appreciated by those who are not devotees or self-realized souls because this Vrindavan Dham is all spiritual. The pastimes of the Lord there are also spiritual. None are material. According to the prayer of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Arkabe nitai chander karuna hoibe sansara vasana mor kabe tucha habe. When will Lord Nityananda have mercy upon me so that I can realize the uselessness of material pleasure? Vishaya chariya kabe shuddha habe mana kabe hama herava sri Vrindavana. When will my mind be cleansed of all material dirt so that I will be able to feel the presence of spiritual Vrindavan? Rupa raga nata pade hoibe akuti
Kabe hama bujabo se jugala piriti.
When will I be attracted to the instructions of the Goswami so that I will be able to understand what is Radha and Krishna and what is Vrindavan? These verses indicate that one first has to be purified of all material desires and all attraction for fruitive activity and speculative knowledge if one wishes to understand Vrindavan. In reference to the words aprakrita navina madana, aprakrita refers to that which is the very opposite of the material conception. The Mayavadis consider this to be zero or impersonal, but that is not the case. Everything in the material world is dull, but in the spiritual world everything is alive. The desire for enjoyment is present both in Krishna and his parts and parcels, the living entities. In the spiritual world, such desires are also spiritual. No one should mistakenly consider such desires to be material. In the material world, if one is sexually inclined and enjoys sex life, he enjoys something temporary. His enjoyment vanishes after a few minutes. However, in the spiritual world, the same enjoyment may be there, but it never vanishes. It is continually enjoyed. In the spiritual world, such sex desire appears to the enjoyer to be more and more relishable with each new feature. In the material world, however, sex enjoyment becomes distasteful after a few minutes only, and it is never permanent. Because Krishna appears very much sexually inclined, he is called the new Cupid in the spiritual world. There is no material inebriety in such desire, however. Gayatram trayate yasmat gayatri tvam tatasmrita. If one chants the Gayatri mantra, he is gradually elevated from the material clutches. That which delivers one from the material entanglement is called Gayatri. An explanation of the Gayatri mantra can be found in Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 125. Kama Gayatri mantra rupa hoya Krishna swarupa Sarda chabish akshatar hoy, seyakshara chandra hoy, Krishna kari udai, tijagat koila kama mai. This mantra is just like a Vedic hymn, but it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. There is no difference between the Kama Gayatri and Krishna. Both are composed of 24 and a half transcendental letters. The mantra depicted in letters is also Krishna, and the mantra rises just like the moon. Due to this, there is a perverted reflection of desire in human society and among all kinds of living entities. In the mantra, Klim Kama Devaya Vidmahe Pushpavanaya Dimahi Tanno Nanga Prachodayat, Krishna is called Kamadev or Madan Mohan, the deity who establishes our relationship with Krishna. Govinda. Govinda, or Pushpabana, who carries an arrow made of flowers, is the personality of Godhead who accepts our devotional service. Ananga, or Gopi Jana Balava, satisfies all the gopis and is the ultimate goal of life. This Kama Gayatri, Klim Kama Devaya Vidmahe Pushpabanaya Dimahi Tanno Nanga Prachodayad, simply does not belong to this material world. When one is advanced in spiritual understanding, he can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his spiritually purified senses and fulfill the desires of the Lord. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me and become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus will you come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Atavenu nindasya trai murti mai gatihi spuranti parivesasu mukhabjani swayambhuvaha gayatrim gayatas tasmad adigacha sarojaja sanskritas chadi garuna dvijatam agamattata. Traya prabudota vidir vigyata tatta sagara tustava veda sarena stotranena keshavam. The Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, having been manifested by the divine sound of Sri Krishna's flute, entered the lotus mouth of Brahma, the self-born, through his eight ear holes. The lotus-born Brahma received the Gayatri Mantra, which had sprung from the song of Sri Krishna's flute. Thus he attained twice-born status, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor, God himself. Enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri, which embodies the three Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all the Vedas, with a hymn. The vibration of Krishna's flute is the origin of the Vedic hymns. Lord Brahma, who is seated on a lotus flower, heard the sound vibration of Krishna's flute and was thereby initiated by the Gayatri Mantra. Well, it's a big purport. In the spiritual realm of Vrindavan, Krishna is the spiritual ever-fresh Cupid. He is worshipped by the chanting of the Kama Gayatri Mantra with the spiritual seed Klim. It is said that the Gayatri Mantra is designed to bring one out of the realm of mental speculation and fix him in Brahman. And of course, for achieving perfection in spiritual life, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is quite sufficient to achieve perfection. Nevertheless, following the line of Lord Brahma, Vaishnavas are initiated into the chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. Of course, in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, we have 10 mantras. This is the Kama Gayatri. Many people are familiar with the Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savitur Varanyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Gayatri. This Kama Gayatri is a very intimate description of Krishna, and of course it put Lord Brahma into complete ecstasy when he heard the flute of Lord Krishna, and then he chanted this Kama Gayatri. I think I'll actually stop there. Maybe there are some questions. Yes.
The Gayatri Mantra is always whispered. And the spiritual master always whispers it when he gives it to the disciple.
Yeah.
And also when there's a new Brahmin, he's given a sheet.
Yeah.
Which says, only to be read by Brahmins.
Oh, I don't know about only to be read by Brahmanas. The Maha Mantra is known by everyone, but it becomes effective when it is received by a bona fide spiritual master. So I think Gayatri Mantra and other mantras, there's not only Gayatri Mantra, there are many mantras that are chanted silently and that are received from a guru and are meant to be only chanted on a regular basis by those who've been initiated in it. But it's not that it can't be written down or seen by others. The whole thing is spoiled or something like that. Yeah.
In the spiritual world, Krishna can perform any function with any of his senses. Is that true of a soul, an individual soul?
Well, one of the types of liberation is to have a body exactly like that of Lord Krishna. So it would seem to indicate that if you have Krishna's body, you could do what Krishna can do. What do you think?
I don't know at all.
Go ahead, come on, speculate.
Yeah, that sounds like a good argument.
Any other additions? Yes.
Maharaj, what does it mean to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord?
What does it mean to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord? Well, it means to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord. It means to be prepared to do anything for Krishna, even if it means acting the way the gopis did in Vrindavan. I think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipped their mode of devotion to Krishna as the topmost, fully surrendered. It can mean a lot of things, even here in this material world. It means doing... Many devotees appreciate Srila Prabhupada's, among all of Srila Prabhupada's instructions, the most profound and dynamic of his instructions was do the needful. So, being prepared to do the needful, to get the result, to please Lord Krishna, to please the spiritual master. A good disciple will try to anticipate the desire of the spiritual master and fulfill that desire. An ordinary disciple will wait for the instruction of the spiritual master and then try to fulfill it. And of course, an asara, useless disciple, even after getting the instruction, won't take it very seriously. So if one is surrendered, naturally he's constantly meditating on how to please Lord Krishna 24 hours a day. As it is explained here in the spiritual world, there's no past, present, or future. There's only right now, how can I please Krishna? So it's something like a mind set. When your mind is locked in, fixed in a particular consciousness, and you just, that's all you think about is engaging in devotional service. You have no other, there's no room, there's no space for sense gratification. One thought blends into another thought, and all thoughts are connected to pleasing Krishna. So, any other questions or comments regarding Gayatri Mantra, regarding spiritual sex, or anything else?
Maharaj, which I heard that it's important that spiritual master gives the Gayatri Mantra in a particular ear.
Yes.
Which ear is
it? In the left ear.
And then Brahmanas, they put their thread up to their right ear.
Yeah.
No,
the right ear is also, the sannyas mantra is received in the right ear. I think you'll have to refer to Mahanidhi Swami on this one. Yeah.
So Avatar Maharaj said there are two reasons for this. Well, I don't know if I can remember them both clearly. One is that the...
Oh, it's the modes of nature, something to do with... Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But apparently, I think under the ear, there's a nerve which controls the retention of semen. So when the thread is pressed on that nerve, and you go to pass urine...
You don't pass semen in your urine.
Semen in the urine.
But he's asking in regards to... he would be happy if it were over the left ear too, but he's wondering why the right ear.
There's no, I don't think there's any connection, because you receive it in the left ear. There's no connection with putting it on the right ear.
You're saying there's no connection between receiving the mantra and putting your thread on any particular ear.
Yeah.
They're different functions. Another interesting thing is that devotees, I don't think there's anything against it, but I think it was Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj mentioned to me that devotees, when they want to do something other than go to the toilet and they have to get their Gayatri thread out of the way, they put it on their ear, but they should just throw it over their shoulder. Putting on the ear is especially meant for, as you said, passing water.
But also, I've heard that Brahmana can purify his hand by flicking his right ear.
Can purify?
Purify his hand. If he can't wash anything, he can flick his ear.
Well, there's a practical reason. If you have one of those long threads and it hangs down to your knee, it might get in the way. You put it on. Yeah.
You gave me a license to speculate just now, so
philosophical speculation.
The other reason that Dr. Dekmarsh gave was something I can't remember clearly, but he said something about the seven rivers being present on the ear or something, and the thread becomes connected with them when you put it there. So maybe if you flick your right ear, you put your hand in the seven rivers.
Can you go for a bath in the seven rivers?
Save a lot of water.
I was wondering why I can't hear properly. A little water in the air, yeah.
The push-pump.
Push-pump, yeah.
What is the... Could you give a little elaboration on that one?
Well, Krishna is the supreme Cupid, and he shoots flower arrows. And he attracts the hearts of all the gopis with his flower arrows. And, of course, we have... His name is Madan Mohan.
It's interesting because when we had a temple then, the Prabhupada said a temple, she always had many, many flowers.
Yeah. Said the temple should also should always have many, many flowers.
And he said all the guests should be asked to bring flowers from the local market and offer to the deities.
Yeah. Every major temple in India has a flower market just outside the temple. Of course, that may be a commercial enterprise, but also it's a fact people are requested to bring something. I remember in our temples, in the late 60s, there was always a bowl of rice just as you came in the temple. And the idea was, if you didn't have anything, you took some of that rice and took it up to the deities and offered it to the deities. Devotees did that. So you're supposed to bring something. Did you bring something today for the deities? Okay. You're supposed to bring something to the deity. That's Vedic culture. Whenever you come to see the deity, you should bring some flowers, some fruit, some rice, some offering. This is culture. In fact, it's interesting that the deity in Vedic culture was the center of social, economic, cultural life. Everything, the temple was in the center of the city, and everything revolved around the temple. And people were, you know, just automatically understood the deity was the center of their lives. Yeah?
In connection with that, whenever someone goes to the temple, they always give something. How does that apply to like sannyasis? You don't really have very much, or literally nothing.
Well, they're sitting at the temple to receive it, whatever you want to give. Well, the brahmacharis and sannyasis, I guess, this is mainly an instruction for householders because they come from their house to the temple. Theoretically, the brahmacharis and sannyasis reside at the temple or in an ashram close to the temple. But even they should give whatever they have, even if it's just patram pushpam palam toyam. In fact, they go out begging just to get something to give. Madhukari, one goes and gets a little from everybody to give to the spiritual master and give to the deity. Yeah.
It's interesting also, even here in the ordinary world, love is transferred through flowers.
Yeah.
No one really knows. That's been going on since time immemorial, but no one really kind of... It's a natural, it seems to be a natural kind of inclination.
Yeah, you could offer tomatoes to people, but flowers are probably a little better. I think, you know, flowers are supposed to have, since time immemorial, way back when, flowers probably had a good aroma. and therefore they looked beautiful, they had a nice scent. I mean, I guess it goes way back to not only time immemorial, it goes back to the spiritual world. Krishna's covered with beautiful flowers. Sometimes we cover Krishna with fruits and other things too. Yeah?
Back in Victorian times, there used to be like different flowers represent different types of sentiments. It had down to a fine art, you know, and it'd be like a language.
Oh.
A flower, that would be you're feeling a certain thing in the relationship. So you
that's know. Interesting. What did a rose represent?
Well, actually, like just an expression of love, I think.
Yeah.
But other just it's like forgiveness. It might be a certain flower, or regret. It might be a certain.
Huh. The language of flowers. Yeah, there's so much. We have systematically, virtually annihilated all culture in our so-called civilization. And we're continuing to do so. We're becoming more and more and more impersonal. Otherwise, you know, you just take it back a few hundred years and there was so much culture related to nature and customs and names. Every name indicated an occupation. And any other points from the verse or the purport or Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya, puppets? Yes.
I was wondering, Moses, if you had more reflections on the topic that came up about spiritual leadership.
Spiritual leadership?
Yeah.
Well, the best way to be a spiritual leader is to be led by another spiritual leader. I guess the buzzword nowadays is servant leader. A leader is one who does more service to anyone, to everyone, than anyone else. Where were we? Oh, we were discussing the other day about leadership. Now it's my turn to speak. I remember once I had a disagreement with a very powerful, aggressive ISKCON leader. And this was in India, and so I wrote